Welcome to the Awaken Therapist podcast, where we explore a holistic and transpersonal approach to therapy. In season three, you'll hear live demos, expert teachings, and dynamic interviews to inspire you to awaken transformation in yourself, your clients, and the world. I'm your host, Harmony Quiker. As a psychotherapist, author, and visiting instructor at Naropa University, I created this podcast to empower you to unlock the magic of psychotherapy. To learn about our trainings, community, and resources, check us out at awakentherapist.com. In this episode, I'm joined by my dear friend, Colleen Buckman. Colleen is a gifted psychic, breathwork trainer, musician, body worker, and deeply attuned guide. Colleen's life and work are rooted in direct connection to spiritual devotion. In our conversation, she offers a rich and embodied perspective on what it means to live intuitively. What unfolds in this conversation is a beautiful exploration of how intuition works, not as something we force or fabricate, but as a channel we clear through presence, self-care, and emotional honesty. This dialogue is a living expression of how Gestalt therapy and transpersonal awareness come together to support the awakening of our inner knowing. You can listen to the full teaching from Colleen about cultivating intuition over on Patreon. In transpersonal counseling, we really honor mystical experiences, innate spirituality, non-ordinary states of consciousness as not only healthy and normal, but in service of the healing and transformation that happens. And when a therapist is learning how to hold space in this way, there can be this mistrust. Is this really okay? Is this part of myself that is so private to me that other people aren't talking about? Is it okay if I bring all of myself here? And so that's why I really did want to dedicate an entire episode to speaking about this in particular, because to me, it's really just the essence of everything that we're doing. And you are my favorite psychic friend. And I'd love to hear how you started cultivating your capacity to open up to awareness and intuitive transmissions and reading the Akashic field.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I'll start with my family of origin. So I've got a big family, not my immediate family per se, but my larger extended family. And I've always had, we'll call it like this ability, but to be able to kind of see things before they were going to happen or have intuitive senses of what was going on. My dad used to say, you know, he's very funny. He was like, you come by this very honestly because your great aunts used to play the ponies in Chicago to feed the family. Like they were literally so psychic that they would be able to bet on which horses were going to win and make enough money to feed these very large Catholic families. And so this is something that is just comes from our lineage. But one of the things that I'll say is that I remember from a very young age, like probably 3 or 4, having a sense of when people were going to die. Like I just knew when somebody was kind of at the end of their experience. And it wasn't something that I had language for, obviously, because I barely had language at that time. But I just had a sense of it. And as I went through life, I started to have dreams before people were going to die. And one of the most distinct moments I remember, really like strongly remember, is I was 14 and went to sleep. I woke up from a startled dream in a very like kind of way. And I remember immediately looking at the clock and it was 1 o'clock in the morning in Minnesota, which is central time. And I promptly like kind of had a panic moment and then knew something had happened and then went back to sleep and woke up in the morning and honestly had forgotten that I had like had that whole experience. And I was just getting ready to go to school. It's a 14-year-old. So we go downstairs and it was my dad, my brother and I, and we're walking out the back door and the phone rings. And it's like 7 o'clock in the morning. That's not in a family of five that unusual, but it's an early, like that's an early time. And so I stopped them and I was like, wait, wait, wait. And kind of on cue, my mom screamed. And what had happened is that my uncle, her brother, had died of a heart attack at 2 o'clock in the morning in Jamaica, which is 1 o'clock in the morning in Minnesota. And my dad and my brother, I just remember them looking at me when my mom was screaming because they were like, how did you know that that was what was happening? And I didn't specifically. Like, I wasn't like, I woke up and I got a message from the angels that my uncle was suffering. It wasn't that clear, but it was definitely just some part of me knew that something had happened. From that point on, I would say it just kept getting refined. It's something I've had my whole life. I will also say this is a water faucet that everybody has access to, 100%. And the way that I feel like people experience it is so, it can be very subtle, it can be very loud. And I feel like, and you can speak to this more than I can, but I feel like normalizing it is such a huge part of what we need to be doing in this time period because it's something that's like, you know, this is not a weird mystical thing that only happens to a choice few. This is every mom ever who's had a sense about her child or something like that, every person who looks across a crowded room and is like, I think that person and I have some sort of destiny with each other, you know? So there's just so many moments in life that we chalk up to, I just, you know, whatever. I had a gut feeling, however we language it. But we are afraid to kind of cross it over a lot of times to this bigger field because what does that mean? All of a sudden, are we all walking around reading each other's minds and things like that? And I would venture to argue, yes, it's all
Absolutely.
that is already happening, actually. And we pretend like it's not to stay in social norms, but it's happening all the time. So I don't feel like, even though I have curated something that was already a natural ability of mine, I sincerely don't feel like whatever I have is some sort of special, extraordinary thing. I love the word supernatural because what I think of that super actually means extra. And if you think of supernatural, it really just means extra natural. So natural that it's just the most simple, the most divine way of being. So that's what I think of is of those abilities. It's like it's they're just extra natural.
I love that so much. I love that so much. There are a couple of things in what you just shared that stand out to me. And one is, this is kind of a funny coincidence, I'll say, Colleen, is that when I was younger, my dad used to take me to the racetrack because he told me I knew who was going to win. And he would bet on the horse that I would tell him.
And would he make money? Yes.
Yes, he would make money off of my psychic abilities.
Exactly.
But the thing also, the other piece that feels so similar between our stories is that we had fathers, and my mother too, I'm imagining your mom too, but who saw, honored, and fully respected our intuitive ability, which I do think is rare, you know, and I think that that's needed so much more when you're saying to normalize, like to be normalized in our families, to be normalized in our relationships, in the therapy room. I hear therapists say quite often, I don't know if what I'm sensing is right or not. And so there's this inhibition or this apprehension that comes because it's beyond the logical or the ordinary mind. And so there's like a vulnerability there of learning how to trust this innate capacity.
Absolutely. And it's always good to be in inquiry. I know you're very good about this, in inquiry about it because I'll touch on some of these things in a bit, but we don't know if we're projecting something or we're making something up or we're, you know, if it's coming from our field of reality or So it is important to stay in that inquiry, but a lot of times what I find is I'll encounter a client or a student or something, and as soon as I get into inquiry, it might not be exactly like arrow point correct, but it's usually in the realm of truth for them, with potentially different imagery or different ways that they're experiencing it. So it's important for us to trust those, honestly, to be frank, like animal instincts we have about each other, about what kind of state we're in or what's happening for someone. This happens a lot in Minnesota, but you can walk into a grocery store. I say Minnesota because there's a way that winter can just hammer people in Minnesota. And you walk around and you can tell, like, oh, those people have been trapped inside for 3.5 months and they're not doing very well. And that person went to Florida for a week and they're way happier. Those kinds of things are so obvious, actually, but we take it for granted. We pretend like we don't know. And so much of what being a seer or having psychic abilities or all of that is actually just deconditioning ourselves from pretending like we don't know what we already innately understand. That person looks sad, you know? That person looks like they're moving through something. That person looks like very angry. So it can take a lot of different forms, but it's just that basic being present with what seems like is in the field.
Yeah, the way I like to describe it is we're offering what we're sensing as a gift. We're holding it loosely and we're seeing if the other person wants to receive it. Like if there's resonance there and trusting their sovereignty and their awareness and their choice. It's not just us or just them. It's what we're creating and collaborating with in relationship. When you're talking about the grocery store in Minnesota, I just am remembering like one of I mean, you have so many skills in your psychic abilities, but one is really beautifully about creating a sacred temple within your body and within your home. And it's like you can see where the stored eep is and where we need to bring in mystical resources.
Yeah, and again, that's we're noticing where we're all naturally connected to life force energy, however we want to name that. Prana, breath, your heartbeat, you know, the basic things that keep us alive. And anytime there's a disconnection, a distortion, a fear, a veil, so what it can be very emotional, it could be very mystical, it can be just straight up physiological. But anytime there are blocks, distortions, veils, emotions between us and our natural essence, it's usually obvious to us in our feeling state. Like, you know, I feel crappy or I feel angry or whatever it is. But it's also obvious to people around, especially if they're used to you in a certain condition and they witness you in another condition. So let's say somebody has more of an Eeyore constitution, to reference Winnie the Pooh, and they tend to be just more serious, maybe more contemplative, maybe a little bit more downtrodden as a person that comes from their lineage, their family, whatever. And then that person falls in love and you run into them in some experience, you're going to notice, like, oh, wow. Like all of a sudden, that person who's normally like, I don't know, Pooh, doesn't seem like things are going very well, is like, actually, life is good. You know, it's obvious something is happening for them. And obviously, the other way is usually more obvious when we're in kind of some sort of naturally in an even keel state, for instance, and then more in a like down state. But we're human beings having emotions all the time, but all of that reads in our feels.
Yeah, and there's also something here too about tending to our own energy. Like the more clear we are, the more we metabolize and process our emotional energy, that we have like a clear access to our intuition, both through our neuroception of what we're seeing outside, but also with what we're sensing within.
100%. I always like the image of that kind of that running water faucet. That can be in a physical space, that can be in your physical body. But as somebody who loves physiology and is actually also a massage therapist, I think about we're mostly oxygen and water. And we have like this much matter kind of gluing us together. And so if we're hydrated, moving our emotions, and also feeling our feelings and things like that, what ends up happening is we have kind of a waterfall of light or life force energy moving through us. And that reads. So we might be experiencing, big hunks of rocks that are coming through that waterfall, but they will move because that energy is in motion. It becomes problematic for us as individuals and for people around us and for environments when those blocks become the norm, when we're committed to them. I love space actually, because physical spaces, meaning because it's such a beautiful metaphor of what's going on in the inside. Like the weird closet that nobody touches or goes into, or that one corner of the house that just never gets vacuumed or never gets looked at. And it tends to be a catch-all for all of the things that we're not wanting to, willing to, or excited about looking at. So we're going to procrastinate, avoid, stuff away. And we have those places in our bodies, in our consciousness, in our physiology, and all sorts of places where we store those things. And then it tends to catch up with us. We don't feel good, we're unhappy, we feel stagnant, all of that. So anytime I feel personally stuck in some way, I do what I can to move the energy. So breath work, cleaning is a big one that I do, singing, biking, things to just move it. However, and then you're going to experience all the things that come up with moving it. A lot of times, the first thing that happens is I just moved a couple months ago, and the first thing that happens is everything's a disaster. If you clean out a closet, you're just the first thing that you've done is made a giant mess. And that's important to look at too when we're looking at all of this kind of work, because if we've been holding things back, our intuition, our psychic ability, our connection to divinity, to each other, the first thing that happens when you open that can of worms is an unsavory treasure trove of things you don't want to look at. And then it gets clearer and lighter and becomes more like that waterfall. So yeah, it's important when we're thinking about this kind of presencing and work is that we're always bringing to the table where we are and how clogged up our channel is. To quote Elvie Orr, who is Leonard Orr's wife, who is my breathwork teacher, was Leonard Orr, and he would talk about all the time, and she references too, that 50% of your job as a practitioner is self-care. That for you to be as clear as you possibly can be. And it doesn't mean being inauthentic. It means showing up to the table as you are, but with as much movement and ability to be open and discharging and flexible as you can be while still being professional and all of that.
What I love about the closet metaphor is that I think I'm hoping that people can see that when the closet is, in disarray and you're hyper-identified, like orienting around the messy closet, but without tending to the closet, it's actually blocking and inhibiting that flow of intuitive waterfall chi for moving through us. And along with this, and this is something that I really was deeply reminded by you when I met you, because of breathwork in particular. I grew up with breathwork and then I didn't do it for a very long time. And when I met you, I was like full of closets that needed to be cleared out.
It's just normal. We're all walking around with those.
Yeah, it's just part of life. But that when I am not practiced in accessing non-ordinary states of consciousness in my own personal life, then I arrive to the therapy room as in the seat of clinician, hyper-identified with my mind, generating ideas, making meaning, creating stories from all of these uncleaned closets, which doesn't mean that I don't also have access to intuitive transmissions. It just means that there's a little bit of clearing out that needs to happen before I can really hear the receptive quality of the antenna that awareness is, right? Because the mind searches, but intuition is received.
Yeah. And intuition just is. It's reading something that's a bigger volume of what's going on than the mundane, which is the motor of life. And equally as important, obviously, but not the only thing going on. So you want to have a good balance of those things. Otherwise, just as much as it's not ideal to be lacking ritual and innate connection and things like that in our lives, if we're all living only in the, we could call them upper chakras, and there's no rooting on the earth, it becomes like, with full respect, but every hippie I've ever met at a festival in my life, like, yeah, man, I've just been like, going on people's couches and just experiencing the oneness of everything. I think it's beautiful. And a lot of times what that translates to in the third dimension is I've just been taking advantage of everybody around me and not really totally being responsible for myself. And so any of those ways can be harmful to ourselves and not fully enacting all of who we are. So we just want to be aware of that, what we're bringing to the table.
I would love if you're willing to talk a little bit about spirit guides, helpers, fairies, allies of different dimensions that maybe our physical eyes can't see, but some other aspect of us can sense or maybe even see with our metaphysical eyes.
There are so many helpers. We have a sense of that innately, especially as children, which is why kids love those stories. They love to talk about fairies and mystical things because there's an innate understanding that some aspect of that is real. And some people, very obviously see fairies, guides, angels, ancestors, prophets, all of them. But there is a realm just beyond this realm that we touch all the time. And it's really accessible at sunrise and sunset because those veils are very thin. To be able to know that there are these other living sentient beings that exist that help this creation work. I think about fairies are beautiful ones because every bee, every butterfly, every plant that's growing, there are fairies who are can be huge, can be very, very small in their physicality, but there's these beautiful ways that they make life go. And if you can tune into their, we'll call it their realm, you know where fairies are because things are feel mystical and aligned and growing and thriving. And when they're absent, it feels desolate. Like there's something when we're missing that contact with that other world where the animals don't seem healthy, the foliage and the vegetation seems more dead, there isn't water, like all of these things start to play into it. But how we experience that is can be very practical and very like, well, that's just global change or that's just environmental problems or but the reality is there's another whole realm holding creation together. And if it's disrespected or not being tended to, then they will leave and go occupy a place where there is tending. So it's just important to really know that that veil that we're all living inside of, but also just kind of just barely touching at the same time, is holding our reality together. I spend many moments of every single day asking angels to be helping in all sorts of ways. Help everyone who's in their cars, help everybody on this drive, help this client who's suffering, help my dog be protected, help just whatever needs support. And what's cool about Earth is that we have free will. And so we get to turn away from whatever mystical support is around us anytime we want, because that's our autonomy and our sovereignty. Just when I said that, by the way, a beautiful hummingbird is now just perched in front of me. So we have that right as sovereign beings to say no to that support. And we get the opportunity then to look at what happens in our lives when we turn away that support, either consciously by actually turning away or unconsciously by not actively asking for it. Because part of the free will aspect is you have to ask for that support, or you have somebody asking for that support for you on your behalf.
In people who've experienced complex trauma, when they feel like they don't belong in this world, or like that they feel all alone on the journey, that accessing mystical resources and allies and remembering that they're not alone can just be so transformative and just reassuring, even just asking for help and seeing what happens, just out of curiosity, just therapeutically. The other thing is that I get asked daily how I tend to my own energy. And one of the main ways, and I don't actually say this very often, so here it comes, is I feel very connected to fairies. I mean, with my kids, we used to go build fairy houses and like for the woodland fairies. And every single day, every single morning, I ask the fairies to help identify, locate, and remove energy that's living in my system that does not originate with me and is not mine to process. Because I can't always see it on my own, but I know they can. And it's such a huge resource for me.
And fairies are such, I love the example of Tinkerbell because Tinkerbell is such a badass. And that's how fairies actually are. Like they get kind of portrayed as like these fragile little beings. But the truth is they're these very strong mystical beings that really make life go. So yes, asking for help and support. And I really love what you said about when there's trauma of any kind. Usually, some part of us, because of these shocking, horrific things that have happened in our lives, will turn away from that support, that mystical support, because it can, understandably, we get into rage and resentment and all sorts of feelings of like, but where were you when that horrific thing was happening? And so it's important to constantly be recalibrating to that energy of support. And doing our best in our own personal work to uncover what was happening in those time periods.
Thank you. Yeah, and I'm going to put all of your information in the show notes, and hopefully people will join us for the second half of this, for the teaching portion. But as we close out this part, is there anything that you want to say?
One of my favorite quotes is from Joseph Campbell. And he talks about when you have experience of something, you no longer need faith because your experience of that thing now replaces the need for faith. And I would say, in terms of the mystical, the unseen world, things like that, when you've had direct experiences consistently over and over again, you see that there is something else going on, and the mind's desire to identify exactly what that is, or why it's like that, or does it fit into this belief container, this religious container, things like that. It starts to relax because you have had a direct experience of something.
I love that so much. Thank you so much. If you found this episode meaningful and want to hear the full conversation, you can access the entire episode by joining us on Patreon. Your support helps make this work possible and allows us to continue offering deep experiential content like this. As a member, you'll also get access to extended sessions, discounts on trainings, and behind-the-scenes discussions on the therapeutic process. To join the community and learn more about our trainings, visit us at awakentherapist.com or click the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening.